take me. Once I was forced to believe that Jeffrey really had cancer, my mind played another big trick on me. I started to think that if I just made the right promises to God, he would magically make Jeffrey all better again. And the promises just popped into my head, right and left, day and night. This made for a tough couple of weeks. I'd be in the lunch line at school and a pack of ring-dings would catch my eye. I'd say to myself, okay, if I don't eat those, Jeffrey will get better. Or I promise things like, if I never hit Jeffrey again, he'll get better. About 20 times a day, too, I'd swear that I'd never think impure thoughts about Renee Albert again if Jeffrey would be all right. But let's face it, I am a 13-year-old American male. I have no willpower. So every night I'd go to bed totally convinced that I was going to gain 20 pounds and be a fat, violent pervert forever, and that my little brother was doomed. Then in the morning, I'd start all over, like, I'll floss every single day, even between the molars, if... Of course, there were times when I wasn't bargaining, but those were generally just times when I was busy breaking the promises. It was like the exact opposite of Lent. I would swear to give things up and then immediately do them. I was a mess. When I realized how bad I was at giving things up, I tried to find other deals I could make with God. One day in gym, we were hitting softballs with this pitching machine that the baseball team uses for training, which we almost never get to use, but it was a really nice day and the teachers must have been desperate to get outside one last time before winter started. So I was telling myself, alrighty, if I hit this next pitch, Jeffrey is okay. Then I'd miss, because with my thick glasses, I basically have no depth perception at all. So immediately I'd be at it again. Okay, how about 2 out of 3? Strike 2. 4 for 6? Whiff. 7 out of 10! Naturally, I know what a spasmo I am at sports. Yeah, I know drummers are supposed to be coordinated, but it doesn't matter how coordinated you are if you're as blind as a bat. So I know I should have found some smarter bets to make. And I did. By the end of the first week, I was scrounging at the bottom of the barrel for deals to make. Here's a pathetic one. Here goes a good offer, Lord. If that bird on that tree over there flies away within 10 seconds, Jeffrey is cured. That was in the middle of math class, while I was staring out the window as the class checked the homework I hadn't done. Unfortunately, I got distracted by the teacher's despairing cry. Alper, any chance you can answer number 37? When I looked back out there, the bird was long gone, probably scared off by the outburst of yelling that was going on in my classroom. I was fairly certain it had been longer than 10 seconds between when I first looked away and the moment when the teacher's attempt to engage me devolved into top-volume random threats to my safety. But we'll never know for sure. As usual, drumming was my big escape from all this reality stuff. Rehearsals and practice times by myself were like these little islands of okay in a vast sea of holy crap. So I hopped from little musical island to little musical island. One day, a weird thing happened to me. I left math class to go to the bathroom, and on my way back, I heard this beautiful piano playing coming from the band room. Now, of course, I knew it had to be Annette. She was the only unbelievable keyboard prodigy in the building, and I knew that she had this independent study piano period. But when I walked over and stuck my head in the band room door, I couldn't really process what I was seeing. There was this truly pretty girl sitting at the piano, with this amazing posture and her hair falling long around her face in a quite non-Annette-ish way and a serene look I had never noticed on her face before. She finished the piece and looked up after a long, long time. I would be toasted like a barbecue wiener when I got back to math, and blushed. She actually blushed. It was like, as soon as the music disappeared, so did smooth Annette. Then she mumbled, Chopin. What? That piece, it's Chopin. I'm getting ready for an audition at Juilliard next month, but I'm not nearly ready yet. You're kidding, right? That was the best thing I've ever seen, ever. Ever. What's at Juilliard? It's a famous music school in Manhattan. They have an intensive program for high school students every Saturday from 8 to 1. So you'd have to get up around 6 to get there? I'd have to get up around 4:30 to get there, but my parents are willing to drive me, and don't you want to have some free time on Saturdays? Stephen, this is... Oh, forget it. Want to try something? Suddenly, another new Annette had sprung up. She had kind of a mischievous, flirty grin on her face. "Sure. Sit down at the drum set. Go ahead. Now get ready to play what you hear, okay?" All right. And she burst into this fantastic, complicated jazz thing. So I tried to play along with the ding-ding-a-ding ride cymbal thing that always works for jazz and immediately got the beat all turned around and messed up. Annette stopped playing and laughed. She looked at me and jumped in again. Again, I got ruined in seconds. So she jumped in for another go-around. And another. And another. Finally, I had to ask, "What is this?" "Oh, it's just a little something I picked up off a CD this week. It's called Take Five. It's by this piano player named Dave Brubeck from, like, 1963. Why can't I play it?" "Well, the beat is in 5-4 instead of 4-4. "Huh?" "You have to count five beats in every measure instead of four. That's why it's called Take Five. Want to take another shot?" Just then, the bell rang, and I realized I had now officially skipped out of my first class ever. Annette just smiled that new smile again and flipped me a CDR disc. "Here it is. Learn it." Then she bopped off down the hall with the old bunny on puppet strings walk I was used to, leaving me to wonder what had just happened. I was fairly sure that something had.